Hey everyone, it's Ryan here with Cardinal Aviation. Welcome to episode number 33 of the Cardinal Aviation audio briefings. Thank you very much for being here. Thanks for joining us. I've got a really interesting topic today that is gonna be more applicable to the IFR side, but I want to keep it interesting for everyone. So we're going to talk about some IFR departure stuff, like interpreting the wording on the plate, particularly for IFR departures, for missed approaches. I also want to give you a little update on the heli training that I've been doing with Sam Adams over there at BC Helicopters. About 5 hours into that, and it's definitely been an interesting journey so far. But before we get into the luxury kind of IFR storytelling side of this, I just wanted to give a huge shout out and thank you to the Canadian Owners and Pilots Association, COPA, as well as the British Columbia General Aviation Association, for the distinct honor, and I'm humbled and speechless for it, but I was one of the recipients of the COPA Director's Award this week at the COPA Annual General Meeting and Awards, and the Director's Award is given out in appreciation for personal efforts to advance, promote, and preserve the Canadian freedom to fly. And that means so much to me to be recognized for that. I like to say flying is an art and aviation is a way of life, and it's a way I live my life. It is something that grounds me. I believe so strongly in giving back to the aviation community because it is all about community, and in doing so we promote safety, we foster proficiency. We just want to be the best that we can be in all things aviation. And you know what? It's not something I went out to try and earn or win, but it feels really good to be recognized for the work that I usually use the term we, because everything in aviation is team oriented, and whether it's the community as a whole, a board of directors on an organization, a crew of pilots, I like to use the term we. I really don't usually like using I, but it is very nice to be recognized for what we do in furthering general aviation in Canada. So I won't belabor that. I just wanted to say a huge thank you to anybody that was involved in that. It is a great honor and a privilege. Okay, moving on with, I always do this okay, like I just don't care about what I just said, but I do care. I just have these little nuances in how I speak, and we're on 32 episodes, so you're used to it by now, but you know, it is what it is. A couple weeks ago, I was flying with a client, and we went and did a IFR training flight. So we did a bit of a cross-country up to a place called Campbell River, which is a flight service-controlled airport, or flight service-served airport, I should say, on Vancouver Island up the British Columbia coast. And we went and flew an approach there and ended up going down to Victoria and back. But anyway, while we were going into Campbell River, we were briefing an approach plate. And forgive the audio here. I'm just kind of looking off to the side here at the plate. But we were briefing, and if you want to pull it up yourself, it's the ILS 1-2 approach into Campbell River. And this is what kind of sparked this topic of how to read the verbiage in the plate, how to get the most of it. And we briefed the whole plate, and we got to the missed approach. And the missed approach says, missed approach, climb to 3,800 on track 117 to the QQNDB, shuttle to 6,300 or MEA before proceeding on course. I'll read that again. Climb to 3,800, track 117 to the QQNDB, shuttle to 6,300 or MEA before proceeding on course. If you look at that very short little sentence, there's two altitudes in there. The first altitude is, and I should just give some context, the missed approach altitude is 607 feet. So it says climb to 3,800, track 117 to the QQNDB, shuttle to 6,300 or MEA before proceeding on course. So the question to you is, if I were to set an initial altitude for the missed approach, am I setting 3,800 or am I setting 6,300? What is the top altitude for this missed approach? And this was a question that the client I was working with actually asked at the beginning of the flight. He goes, you know, I went in here a few weeks ago and I didn't know which altitude to use. And my answer to him was, you know what, if you're unsure, just ask the controller what they expect. I mean, the controllers know the approaches and the missed approaches in their airspace like the back of their hand. So who better to ask? So sure enough, on our way into Campbell River, we were talking to the controllers there at Comox Terminal. And I asked them, I said, quick question, and this caught them a bit off guard. I said, for the ILS 12, the missed approach says climb to 3,800 on track 117, which is runway heading, to the QQNDB and shuttle to 6,300 RMEA before proceeding on course. I said, what is your expectation for an initial climb altitude on a missed approach off that procedure? And the controller had a little bit of a laugh and he said, well, our expectation is that you climb to 3,800 until you reach QQ and then you start climbing in shuttle to 6,300. But we know that people often misunderstand it. So we technically or will usually protect all the way up to 6,300 in case they blow the first altitude, which tells us something. I mean, if controllers are protecting altitudes because they know that something could be misunderstood, then it tells me one of two things. Either we need to work on how we interpret the verbiage, or the verbiage needs to be more clear. I'll leave it up to you. But what I want to do is, I know we're not going to change all the verbiage today, but we can work together to figure out how we can interpret the instructions on a missed approach procedure, on a departure procedure, to make sure that we have the best chance of being in compliance, if nothing else. So what it all comes down to, and we're going right back to the first grade here, is punctuation. I'll say that again. What it comes down to is punctuation. And it is really important to chunk up these little statements or little procedures into individual elements. It's really easy when we're flying and when we're trying to brief a departure, brief an approach, brief a missed approach, to read a procedure as one big run-on sentence. So let's read this one. It's probably the fifth time I've read it now. Let's chunk it up. Actually, it says, missed approach, climb to 3,800, track 117 to the QQNDB, period. Capital, shuttle to 6,300 or MEA before proceeding on course, period. So if we chunk this up using punctuation as we learned in elementary school, it actually clarifies it a little bit. The first sentence says, climb to 3,800 runway heading to the Comox NDB. The second sentence says, shuttle to 6,300 or the MEA before proceeding on course. Pretty clear that way, isn't it? I agree. So let's look at another one. And now we're gonna, you know, I'm gonna sidestep here a little bit. Before we talk about some departure procedures, I want to review a little bit about IFR departures. And this could be, again, I say this all the time, a whole nother episode, but you know what? We're here, we're having a good time, so let's just dive right into it. When we are talking about IFR departures, it is really important, and I'm talking more Canadian rules here, to understand the difference between four things. Four different kinds of departure. One is a vector SID. SID, standard instrument departure. Two, pilot nav SID. Three is a departure procedure. And four is not assessed. Give that a little bit of thought as to what the differences are between a vector SID, pilot nav SID, departure procedure, and not assessed. I'll give you a quick little breakdown. A vector SID is a SID that oftentimes it'll be like take off and fly heading such and such, climb to this altitude, and expect radar vectors on course. Sometimes it may have something like climb to 600 feet, turn right heading 203, and then fly that heading, climbing to whatever altitude, and expect radar vectors on course. That is a vector SID, and right up in the top left hand corner of the approach plate it'll say SID, and then in brackets it'll either say vector or pilot nav or RNAV. Oftentimes it'll say as well. A pilot nav or RNAV SID actually gives you point to point to point to point to point, and usually links up with an airway or some en route segment. There isn't kind of like a heading that you fly forever to expect radar vectors on course. And a pilot nav or an RNAV SID is going to be more common in maybe a more remote area where a SID was deemed to be beneficial. Departure procedures are by far the most common. And departure procedures are, on the Canadian charts anyway, if you go into the approach plate catalog, what you will see usually listed on the aerodrome chart page. And it's usually all text. There's very rarely any sort of visual depiction, which means we have to get really good at reading the text and interpreting it to make sure that we're safe on departure. Lastly is not assessed. Now, if there's an airport and it has an approach procedure, it has an approach plate, and you go to the aerodrome chart and you look at takeoff minima and it says, you know, runway, whatever it is, 16, not assessed. Can we depart IFR off a not assessed runway? And the answer is yes. Because there's one thing to remember. Anytime you're flying an IFR departure, the pilot is responsible for terrain clearance. I'll say that again. The pilot is responsible for terrain clearance. Departure procedures, as they are published on the aerodrome chart, what it really is it's a suggestion. It's saying, if you follow this procedure to the letter, you will be safe. We've tested it. You will be safe. You're still responsible, but if you do this, you will be safe. That said, if you are flying a departure procedure, unless you've been told to fly a specific departure procedure, you can deviate from it, but you are taking responsibility for your own terrain clearance and all that stuff until you're at a safe altitude. If you've been assigned a SID, a standard instrument departure, and that's usually, I'll just use a local one, you know, the Pitt Meadows 3 departure, the Abbotsford 8 departure, they usually have a number attached to them. You can't deviate from that. You need to follow that by the letter if you are cleared for the SID, because it is standardized. You must fly it exactly. So why do I bring all this up? Well, what if you are, and this came up in a session I had with somebody last week, what if you were departing, let's say, an airport called, we're going to use Cranbrook, and if you want to look it up, it's Charlie Yankee X-Ray Charlie, and it is in the mountains. There's terrain everywhere, and if we look at the departure procedure for Cranbrook, and there's no SID, let's go off runway 16 for a Category B airplane, and it says, requires a half-mile visibility, requires a minimum climb gradient of, I'm going to read this as a run-on sentence, as many of us do when we're briefing. Requires minimum climb gradient of 410 feet per nautical mile to 7,400, climb heading 164 to 5,700, then left turn to 9,400, direct the Cranbrook NDB as required, shuttle climb inbound track 345, all turns left, max 200 knots before proceeding on course. That made no sense. But the number of times people brief like that because, well, I read it, so therefore I briefed it, is astounding. So what if we were to chunk it up? Okay. Category A and B, half mile required. Requires minimum climb gradient of 410 feet per nautical mile to 7,400, period. Okay, so that's the first statement. Can I maintain 410 feet per nautical mile to 7,400? Well, I go to this handy dandy chart. I'm going to be climbing out at 120 knots, so 410 feet per nautical mile. Okay, 820 feet a minute. Can I hold that to 7,400 feet? Let's say yes. Condition met? Check. Now we move on to the next sentence in this procedure. Climb heading 164, so this is runway heading, to 5,700 feet, period. Okay, so that's the first step. The first thing was a condition. Requires minimum climb gradient. We can do that. The next sentence, really short. Climb heading 164 to 5,700. I can do that, period. Then, climbing left turn to 9,400, direct the Cranbrook NDB, period. Okay, so far we're going to climb runway heading to 5,700, and then we're going to do a climbing left turn to 9,400, direct the Cranbrook NDB. So as far as I'm concerned here by reading this, my top altitude on this departure procedure, unless I've been cleared something else, which you would have been, is 9,400. The 5,700 isn't something I'm ever going to set my altitude alerter to. It's just telling me to what altitude I need to climb straight out before I make that left turn to Cranbrook NDB. All right. So you're with me here still so far? Climb gradient to 7,400, runway heading to 5,700, then a left climbing turn to 9,400, direct the NDB. Next sentence. As required, comma, shuttle climb, inbound track 345, all turns left before proceeding on course. So what it's saying is straight out to 5,700, but we're going to keep climbing to 9,400. At 5,700, we're going to make a left turn to the NDB. If we're not at 9,400 before we reach the NDB, then we need to shuttle climb inbound on a 3-4-5. Pretty simple if we just take a moment, take a deep breath, and chunk it up by punctuation, bit by bit. What's the best way to eat an elephant? One bite at a time. No different from a missed approach procedure or a departure procedure. Let's grab one more, last one. I'm going to look at Chetwynd now. This is a very rarely used procedure, but it's actually a SID, and it's very rare that a remote place is going to have a SID, but it's a departure. Yeah, no, it's a SID. It says departure procedure RNAV. So this is going to be a pilot nav SID, the Airbus 2 departure off runway 05. And this, the wording on this is kind of funky, but let's work through it. I'm going to do the same thing again. Run on sentence first. Runway 05, half mile, restricted to category ABC aircraft only. Okay, simple. Requires minimum climb gradient of 500 feet per nautical mile to 3,000. Climb heading 054, left turn to Airbus track 039 at 6,300. As required, shuttle climb not above 8,000 before proceeding on course. Means nothing. It's just words. But if we bit by bit, how about this? Requires minimum climb gradient of 500 feet per nautical mile to 3,000. Period. Can we do that? Yes. Continue. Climb heading 054. Okay. Then there's a period. Can I climb heading 054? That's runway heading? Sure. Okay. Climb runway heading. Left climbing turn to Airbus track 039 at 6,300. Period. So I don't really like how that sentence is written, but if I take a minute and chunk it up, I kind of have to reverse things here. We're going to climb runway heading, and at 6,300, we're going to make a left climbing turn to intercept the Airbus 039 track. And then as required, shuttle climb, not above this time, 8,000 before proceeding on course. That's interesting. So hopefully ATC in this case has given us another altitude to climb to. Really important here that we read the notes on this departure. There's a note that says, because it is in mountainous terrain, for use by GPS-equipped aircraft, aircraft with GPS and a selectable CDI must be set for 1 nautical mile sensitivity. Aircraft without selectable CDI must use a flight director. So anyway, I'll stop boring you with plates, but if we took nothing else away from this, I want you to understand the difference between the four types of departures: vector SID, pilot nav, departure procedure, and not assessed. And the answer is yes, you can depart from a runway that is not assessed. You just have to find a way to do it safely where you are responsible for not hitting anything. If you want to hook up with me at some point, contact me. We can do a video coaching session. I can give you a couple strategies on how to do that. That's what we do. We help people find workable solutions to their flying. I'm giving you a little taste here of a session I had with somebody the other day where we were talking about these departures. We spent 2 hours going through different procedures and how we would fly it and interpreting the verbiage. So taking away what the four different types of departures are, and then if nothing else, go through your plates and have a look at a couple obscure procedures and chunk it up bit by bit using punctuation and see if that helps clarify some of the wording for you to see if it makes more sense, if it's easier to follow, especially in a high workload environment like the cockpit of an airplane, which is why we brief this stuff on the ground before we leave, which is why we brief this stuff in cruise long before we start our final descent, because we need time to process and understand where the airplane is going long before the airplane gets there. All right, I'm pushing on 19 minutes here, so I'm going to wrap this up. Just wanted to give you guys a quick update on what's going on with the heli thing. I flew with Sam today. It was a really interesting flight. There was a bunch of wind, or he kept blaming it on the wind. I didn't think 10 knots of wind was a lot, but apparently when you're not very good at something like I am with helicopters, 10 knots of wind is quite a bit. Hovering is something we're slowly getting to. I wouldn't say I'm there yet, but I'm able to get closer to it with less thought. We've been doing some different types of approach angles. There's a really cool gravel pit out in the valley there, and we kind of hop from one gravel pile to the next, and it's almost like a skateboard park for helicopters. So we're having a great time. I'm really enjoying the challenge. I still suck at it. 5 hours in, I'm going to keep chipping away. It's a great way to empty one's bank account, but it's, for me, an investment in professional development, in being able to relate to clients and their struggles. And you know what, aviation, like I said, it's a way of life for me. So it's just something I'm really enjoying doing. Interesting thing about that is perspective. So on my first flight with Sam, we went and landed in some crazy little helipads that I told you about on the side of a mountain buried in the trees. And I said, this is just ludicrous. Like, what are the outs here? What are the options? And he's like, yeah, this is easy. I mean, easy said for a, you know, 1700 hour helicopter pilot. So today we changed roles. And after our flight, I took him in the Bear Hawk, and we went and landed at an abandoned logging strip about 30 miles north of here. And he had his biggest smile on his face when we landed on this abandoned logging strip in the woods on a lake. Not a super tight spot, but, you know, tight enough, I guess, if you're not used to airplanes. But anyway, he was as happy about that as I was about landing in the middle of the trees. So it's really neat to kind of see that cross-pollination, that difference in perspective between helicopter pilots and fixed-wing pilots, and almost like a mutual respect, because we don't fully understand what the other can and can't do until we get out there and try it. So helicopter pilot listeners, go invite a fixed-wing guy to go fly with you and show him what it's all about. And fixed-wing pilots, go find a rotor head somewhere at the airport, take him for a flight and show him what fixed-wing is all about. Because I've so far learned that there are so many huge differences, and the biggest for me so far has been, as you know, with airplanes, as you slow down towards landing, you got less airflow over the wings, less airflow over critical control surfaces, so your yoke or control stick movements become more exaggerated because it takes more deflection to move the less air that is there to get your desired result. Well, with a helicopter, the closer you are to the ground and, you know, the slower you are, the more sensitive the controls get, and you can't go for these big movements, otherwise you're in for a rodeo. So over-controlling has been my big challenge. I mean, there's several other challenges, I won't lie to you, but we're working on it, and I'm enjoying the challenge and the process, and I'm not in a rush. I just want to enjoy the journey, and that is what we're doing so far. All right, I'm going to leave it there. I want to thank you guys for your time. I want to thank you for staying with us for 32 episodes. If this is your first, go back and listen to a couple more. Subscribe to us on Spotify, on the Apple, the podcast app, or whatever you want to call it there. Check us out on Instagram at Cardinal Aviation. Online, www.cardinalaviation.ca. And all of our contact info is there. Get in touch with us. We love hearing your feedback. Want to get your questions. I'd love to do an episode that is just answering your questions. So that's going to be my challenge to you guys. Send me your questions. Go easy on me, but let's do a listener question episode here. And if not, I'll just continue down my list of stuff I want to talk to you guys about. All right. Thank you very much. Until next time, fly safely. Never stop learning.